Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
Thank you for joining me on this Veterans Day weekend, where I hope that we all take the time to think about not only those who have served and are serving in the armed forces, but those family members who support those individuals as well. I'm a very proud Army mom, and I'm proud of my son for serving and the sacrifices that he and his wife make, not living in just one place for very long, and all of the training that I watch him go through. I'm so proud, and I salute him, and I salute all of you who have served and are supporting those who served. I want to thank our sponsor as well, Premama, drinkpremama.com. You can find it at CVS, Target, Amazon. It is the prenatal vitamin that actually mixes into your juice, and we appreciate all the support that Premama gives to us. Speaking of nutrients that new moms need, check out madebymothernurture.com, or you can go on Amazon to Mother Nurture. There you will find chocolate truffles and flavored waters that are enhanced with all of the nutrients that expectant moms need. It doesn't take the place of your pre-mama, your prenatal vitamin, but it does give you extra folic acid, DHA, and all of those other things that you need. So talk about buying and sales. Have you noticed all of the Black Friday sales all over your Facebook pages? It's incredible. Other than, you know, who people are voting for, I think the most that I'm seeing is what you should wait to buy. And one of the things that have really caught my eye is QVC actually will have an HP laptop for sale on Black Saturday. So if you're looking for one, you want to hold out for this one. It apparently is going to be the lowest price of the year, and it's as powerful enough for gamers in your house, but also functional enough for your college student and others who might just like to be on Facebook and use their laptops for that reason. We have a fantastic show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking with an author who has written a book about the world of babies, and we're going to be shining our spotlight on one mom who's doing pretty amazing things in not only the world of social media, but doing pretty amazing things with her children as well. And then we're going to move on to talking with someone from Scholastics about the important thing called reading in the lives of our families and our children. And you can't do enough of that, that's for sure. So when we return, we're going to kick off the show by talking with Alma Gottlieb. She is the co-author of A World of Babies, Imagined Childcare Guides for 8 Societies. And before we break, let me just tell you about Mom TV, the place that you need to go online when you want to see what we're doing here on Mom Talk Radio. We have videos for and by moms, everything that you can think of, all the subject matter that relates to a mom, everything for how to feed your child to product reviews. So if you're thinking about a stroller, go to Mom TV. If you're thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know how to prepare for back to school season, go to Mom TV, your video destination online where you can find and watch information that is relevant to you as a mom. It's a great place, and we hope you'll join us on momtv.com.
Mom's Little Secret. Mom Talk Radio.
So I am excited to have with us today Alma Gottlieb. She's the co-author of A World of Babies, and she is a cultural anthropologist specializing in understanding the lives of young children and their mothers in countries around the world. She has authored or co-authored 9 books and a dozen articles, and she's joining us here to talk about her latest work. So welcome, Alma, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
So it's such a unique thought to think about childcare in other societies, and I wondered what inspired you to write this book.
I think we tend to assume that all babies are somehow the same and the challenges for raising children are somehow the same. And although that might be partly true, it's less true than we might imagine. And when we looked at all of the something like 2,000 books about how to raise children that were available in English when we first started this project, we were amazed at A, how many there were, B, how different their advice often was from each other's, and C, how each of them claimed to be universally relevant. And none of those made any sense to us as anthropologists. It sort of went against everything I knew and understood about the diversity of the world. And so we thought it was important because I think many parents are confused by seeing so many different kinds of advice all packaged as if they have a monopoly on wisdom. We thought it was important to reassure parents that there are many different ways to raise children, and many of them work just fine.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because so this summer I was in Uganda and I was watching in one of the villages how little kids, maybe 3-4 years old, had no problem walking through the street or walking down the street by themselves or maybe with a 6-year-old brother. And I thought to myself, or there was, I know at one point I noticed that there were like toddlers who were just idly sitting next to their parents, quietly playing. And I remember saying to one of my classmates, when in the United States would you ever see a 18-month-old child or a 2-year-old just sitting next to their parent while the parent was working or doing the wash or whatever? And just sitting there without, you know, running around in circles and I thought to myself, how different, you know, there might be parents in the United States who would gasp at that 3-year-old walking down the street, but they were perfectly fine doing it.
Those are great observations, and it sounds like it must have been an amazing eye-opener for you. Anytime we travel anywhere in the world, I think we're easily struck by difference, and those differences remind us that what we think of as natural behavior, somehow rooted in our species biology, is often trained from the earliest stages by culture. Even if we think about the motor development stages that all the basic child development textbooks claim is universal, that turns out to be culturally mediated. You may have seen in Uganda children sitting up at the age of 3 to 4 months, and in most Western societies that doesn't happen till about 6 months. Why does it happen half a lifetime earlier for children across Africa? Because much of their days they're spent in a sitting position on somebody's back, carried around. And so they learn to sit. Those muscles get trained early. So even muscle development turns out to be sort of manipulable. Let alone, you know, things like ideas about independence and dependence and so forth.
You know, if you were to judge but just by our standards, you would say, oh, my gosh, those poor children, they're being abused or whatever. But in reality, they are happy and functional and maybe learning a little bit more independence than our children. So why is it important to broaden your view of what's happening in other societies? How does that benefit you as a mother here?
Great question. I mean, there are so many ways to raise children, and an individual parent can't do them all because they don't all agree. There are different goals. If we think about, for example, the goal of independence, in the U.S., we're all about independence. We say we want to promote independence, and we do that with babies from the earliest days by putting babies to sleep in a separate space, typically a crib or a cradle, often in a separate room. We might wire the room with a videotape or audio so we can hear if the baby cries, if we're rich and have a big house and wouldn't hear them cry otherwise. But the goal is to get them to sleep independently through the night. And that mm-hmm. works really well if your goal is to produce an independent child. In most of the rest of the world, for probably most of human history, the past 100,000 years, the goal of child rearing was very different. It was to produce an interdependent child, that is, a child that is part of a community and sees himself or herself as belonging to that community. And the last thing in the world you'd want to do with that kind of goal is to train a child to sleep independently, because you don't want them to think of themselves as a monad. You want to think of themselves as part of a community. And so you'll raise the child sleeping side by side between parents or between siblings, so they feel, you know, protected 24/7 by others. So in making the decisions that we make about parenting, those decisions are organized around values, and sometimes we're aware of the values, and sometimes they're so deep-seated that we don't even consciously articulate them.
And what eight societies did you look at when you were writing your book?
So in this edition of the book, a brand new edition, we have one American sub-community, Somali-American Muslims in Minneapolis. We have two in Europe, one in southern Catholic Europe in Portugal, another in northern Protestant Europe, Denmark. We have two Mideast societies, Israel and Palestinian territories. We have one Asian society, China, one Latin American society, Peru. And we specifically targeted these places because they are hotspots of either important world events, as in civil wars, conflict, refugee situations, or typical of the complicated lives that
right.
people in the 21st century lead as minorities.
I want to make sure that we get your website in. Where do you have a website where folks can go to read your book or to read more about it?
Sure. My own professional website is easy, almagottlieb.com. And then we do have a Facebook page for the book, bringing it right into the 21st century. Every day we publish updates about the book with another excerpt
from
a different chapter.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We'll get that Facebook page up on the website. Thank you so much for being with us. And when we return, we're going to turn the spotlight on one mom who is venting a lot. So we're joined today by Tiffany Greenaway. She is the mom of two, and she blogs at mymommyvents.com. You can find her on Twitter at mymommyvents. And she's here joining us from New York City to talk a little bit about what she's doing and how she's venting online. So welcome, Tiffany, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me.
What was the motivation behind your blog? And I love the name. What was the motivation behind that?
I've been writing my whole life. I started writing in elementary school and continued blogging throughout college. But when I became a mom, it really prompted me to write a little bit more and delve a little into the things that I was dealing with as a new mom. I started My Mom Events after the birth of my second son. I'd had a very rough postpartum period, and I didn't feel like a lot of moms who looked like me were talking about that. So I decided to start my blog and help moms of color who might be dealing with some of the issues that I dealt with after having my children.
And so what have you learned since you started your blog? Has there been like one of those aha moments for you?
I think with my blog, what I aspire to do is help moms to find their confidence in motherhood. And I would say that my aha moment was kind of just realizing that all of us, no matter, you know, what color, what nationality, we all have these universal experiences that we all have as moms. And it doesn't matter how you're raising your children or, you know, what your background looks like. Motherhood is pretty much a universal experience. There's just one point in motherhood where we all feel like
we don't know what we're doing.
I think there's going to be many, many points in motherhood where we don't feel like, I feel like I go maybe 2 or 3 years feeling kind of good. And then like, I don't know what happens, but I'm like, ah, I'm just like the worst mother ever. How do you work through those moments when you just feel like you don't have a manual and you're just at wit's end?
I kind of try and reach out to other moms just to see, like, is this just me or are we all feeling this way? And what have everybody else's experiences been like? And I kind of try to draw off of other people's experiences to help me through what I'm going through.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to approach it. And so, you know, what's your takeaway currently? Like, what's the focus of your blog right now? What will moms find there?
When moms visit My Mom Events, I want them to feel like they're having a conversation in my living room. And I think what they can take away from my site is feeling more confident in their motherhood, feeling inspired and empowered.
That's definitely a plus, because a lot of us don't feel empowered. On your like really great day, like what inspires you? Because you call out that your focus is on inspiring. Like, who inspires you and what inspires you?
I would say my own mother really inspires me. Just knowing where she grew up and, you know, having come to America as a teenager, I think learning from her and seeing what she's gone through and how she's been able to, you know, be successful as a mom and as a woman in the United States really inspires me.
Did like, so it's funny you would say that, because I had a conversation not anywhere on the same level of having a mom who came from another country, but I was having a conversation with my teenager last night, and it was a silly conversation because we were talking about, I don't know, oh, she was going on a field trip, and I said something about, yeah, when I used to go on a field trip, we used to all, you know, our moms made sure that we had a quarter in case we need to call home. And we started talking about how different my teenage years were than her teenage years. And somehow I think she respected me a lot. Like, she viewed it as like, oh my gosh, mom, you survived. Like, wow, like you survived having to find a payphone if you needed to call your mom for a ride home. I mean, it was so funny. And I was like, yeah. And we didn't ride a air conditioned bus that had, you know, internet access to our field trips. Our mom signed up and we got in the back of a station wagon with no seatbelts, you know, and she
right.
just thought like I had traveled across the ocean paddling from Ireland to get here, you know. It's kind of funny. So I want to like remind everybody, your blog is mymomevents.com. And I want to thank you so much for joining us a little bit today, Tiffany. Thank you so much for being here. And when we return, we're turning our attention to scholastics and reading.
You succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
We are joined now by Donalyn Miller. She currently serves as the National Ambassador for Independent Reading for Scholastic. Before joining Scholastic, she taught upper elementary and middle school students. I mean, she has a lot of patients in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which means she lived in a great place in the country. And she was a finalist for the 2010 Texas Elementary Teacher of the Year. She is the author of a book, The Book Whisperer, where she reflects on her journey to become a reading teacher and describes how she inspires and motivates her middle school students to read over 40 books a year. That's incredible. Right now, she hosts a Scholastic's video series called The Book Whisperer, and we're delighted to have her here on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Donalyn, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to join you.
Well, I am just so curious to find out how you motivate middle school kids to read 40 or more books a year. That's like the impossible dream in our house.
Well, you know, it's really what's interesting is what we do in the classroom is also easily transferable to what we can do at home with kids. And it's some of the same tenets. So providing access to books, making sure kids have a lot of open access to books through the library, that they own some books at home, that they have books in the classroom. Also celebrating students' choices and encouraging them to choose from a variety of books, having lots of books available for them to select from, thinking about their interests. You know, we often bemoan that children don't read, and then we complain about their choices when they do. I don't think we could have it both ways there. Dedicating time to read on a daily basis, time to read in the classroom, setting aside time to read at home. That, I know, as a mother of two daughters, it becomes more problematic as they get older and they have so many activities. But even just 15 minutes a day as a family, just sitting around and everybody reading something, reinforces that message that reading is important because we're willing to make time for it. As parents and as adults in children's lives, we can also model what a literate life looks like. Talk to our kids about what we're reading, talk to them about even things that we're reading for work, you know, so they recognize the value that literacy has in all aspects of their life. I think those are things we can do in the classroom, and we can also do them at home.
Right, right. So are there times when you can read out loud still to a middle schooler and engage them in reading? Because that's like one thing that my husband has always done with my four kids. And even when they got into high school, he's still reading out loud to them. And I have to say, I always was like, what are you doing? But looking back, my kids loved it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Scholastic conducts a kids and family reading report every a couple of years, and they ask children all around America about their reading habits and their interests. And you know, school-age children, 6 to 17, report that their parents stopped reading out loud to them before they wanted them to. We don't age out of the benefits of read-alouds. I always joke that if we aged out of read-alouds, the audiobook market would not exist. I mean, even as adults, we still enjoy listening to a fluent reader read to us. And so a lot of value in reading with our middle school students and our high school students. We did the same thing. Our oldest daughter grew up with Harry Potter books, and we still read Harry Potter as a family when those books came out every year. And it was just a great way for us to come together as a family every night.
Are there certain types of books that you recommend?
Do you mean specific books or just types of books?
Or just types of books, yeah.
Well, I do look at the award list, you know, the Newbery Awards, the Caldecott Awards, the Prince Awards, which is also an award for young adults. For young adult literature, and also look at websites like the We Need Diverse Books website, which lists a lot of resources for diverse titles to share with kids. So I recommend those award lists and websites. I'm always looking for ways to recommend specific books to specific children, and we want to stay on top of kind of what are the new, some of the new titles that are coming out. I also co-founded a website called Nerdy Book Club, which is at nerdybookclub.com, and we have regular reviews and lists of new and also classic titles.
Where can folks go to find out more about you?
Well, I have my website at bookwhisperer.com that houses my blog. It also has links to some of my most requested articles over the years.
And, okay, so I have to ask this question. You mentioned Harry Potter. What is your favorite elementary book, and what is your favorite middle school book?
Oh, that's like asking me to pick my favorite breath of air. But
I know, but, well, but I have to ask the question.
Well, if I look back historically, one of my favorite books that I shared with my middle schoolers over the years was a book called When You Reach Me by Rebecca Stead. It was actually a Newbery winner a few years ago, and it just made a great read aloud. It's set in the 70s. It kind of has a twist in the book that kids might not see coming, and And they enjoy that book every year that I've read it to them. This year, my favorite middle grade book for elementary school children is a fantasy book titled The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill. And it reminds me of Lloyd Alexander and Susan Cooper and some of our classic fantasy tales.
That's very cool. And so all of those books that you just mentioned, you can find, I guess, on Amazon. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Or okay. Your independent bookstore.
Okay. And then and one last question before we let you go. The Scholastic video series that you host, the Book Whisperer Back to Books, where can we watch that?
You can find that show on Scholastic.com, on the Scholastic website. You can just Google Book Whisperer Back to the Books, and it'll take you right to the page if you'd rather find it that way. And that show comes out with a new episode every week with tips for reading with children and also book recommendations.
Well, that's definitely something that we want to tune into because it's reading is a lifelong joy and passion that I know all moms want their children to adopt. So thank you so much for joining us today, Donlyn Miller, and we'll have a link to some of those great websites that you just mentioned. You know, as we move into the fall season, I know that holiday shopping is on everyone's mind as well as decorating. And I have to tell you that recently I discovered the at-home stores. And if you've ever driven by one like 100 times. They're just very unpretentious from the outside, and all it says is at home on the marquee. You have to go inside. 50,000 products in there, and most of them are Christmas related right now. So they have an indoor tree lot with, oh my gosh, so many artificial trees. It's just amazing. If nothing else, you just have to go in to see the artificial trees they have. But if you're into crafting or home decor, or you're just looking for unique gift ideas, you have to check out At Home. I'm so mad that we don't have one in South Florida where I live. But every time I travel somewhere, I always like peek and see if they have one there. If you haven't been in there, you got to check it out. The prices are fantastic, and you can do so much for decorating your home. Last week, I got an awesome bulldog, sculpture that reflects my love of English bulldogs, and it just looked perfect in my house. So check it out. You can go to athome.com as well to find out more about what they have there. So when we return, we are going to be talking with Dr. Annette Edens. She is the author of From Monsters to Miracles.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
So my next guest left the world of finance to retrain as a psychologist, which became her interest. She actually has a new book out called From Monsters to Miracles, and she's joining us here on Mom Talk Radio to talk about her experiences, the book, and what motivated her to come to this point. So welcome to the show, Dr. Annette Edens.
I appreciate this opportunity.
Well, thank you. So tell me a little bit about the book, From Monsters to Miracles.
Well, I found that I started working as a psychologist with families with substance abuse problems a long time ago, and I found that I was saying so many of the same things over and over again that were just the basics that people needed to really understand. And at one point, there's a family foundation, the Fondren Foundation, offered to support me while I wrote the book. And so happily, that worked very well for me. So I did some workshops and wrote the book, and it's really been an opportunity to have in print those basic elements of parenting that are really critical for adolescents.
You know, we all teach our kids to be entitled to getting what they want when they want it, including our time and attention. Why is it important to avoid this lesson with our children? Because we all seem to do it from the very, very beginning. You know, we don't let our kids cry themselves to sleep. We don't let them get fidgety and deal with it. I mean, Lord knows, even if we have a puppy, we're afraid to leave it in the cage. Why is this a bad idea?
Because the children can't develop any kind of problem solving. They don't have any tolerance for discomfort, and so they, and it makes us the sort of controllers of their happiness. And so anytime they're unhappy, it's our fault. So they don't have any way to sort of understand that they can actually be captains of their own ship and guide it in ways that will lead to a more satisfying life. If we come in and clean it up or shelter them every time they fall down, well, right, they'll never learn gravity. You know, they've got to learn some basic things about, oh, yeah, if I don't do my homework and it's not turned in on time, I'm going to have a problem with my grade. But what
and
we do is we raise them and help them do that.
Why do you think moms do that today?
Well, I think that there's a pendulum that swings between generations, and the Depression era parents did not do that. And they raised children that were not entitled. And those parents would watch their child fall and kind of go, oh, wow, look, you fell. That's too bad. And didn't feel all warm and fuzzy. So then those of us who were raised by those parents think, oh, well, I'm not going to be that cold parent. I'm going to be the one that makes sure my kid feels good all the time. And we just respond to how we were parented in ways that and to the way other parents are parenting their children. But in this particular issue is one that has been very unhealthy for this generation.
So what do we do if we find ourselves, you know, our child is 12, 13, 14 years old, and we start thinking, gosh, you know, he really or she really does seem entitled. What do we do at that point? Is it irreversible?
It's absolutely reversible. It is not irreversible. You can begin to require that your child, as they get older, they get more responsibilities that they have to and more privileges that they have to earn. So they begin to have to do their own laundry and clean up their own room and do their, you know, maybe have other chores, and that they have to earn money to be able to buy things. And they don't just get a car when they're 16. They got to get out there and get a job. Those kind of things that really ultimately build their self-esteem when they're taking responsibility for giving themselves the life that they want. So I've seen parents who've decided that they're no longer doing their child's laundry, and it takes a month of that child wearing the same dirty clothes over and over again before the child finally decides they're tired
Absolutely.
Of being messy, you know?
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but this is really good content. I just, in 30 seconds or less, can you give everybody the website where they can go to find you?
Yes, it's AnnetteEdens.com, and Annette is spelled with one N, AnnetteEdens.com.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And when we return, we're going to turn our attention to Dr. Brittany Garcia, who is going to talk to us about some of the things that parents need to know about taking their children out to dinner and about their iPhones. I'm joined in our final segment by Dr. Brittany Garcia. She is a pediatric psychologist at a children's hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She specializes in psychological assessment and treatment of children with chronic health conditions, and always accepting new patients, but he is here to kind of just do a roundtable conversation on a lot of things that parents have on their mind. So welcome, Dr. Garcia, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk. I'm just going to throw some conversations out at you and topics and get you to react to them. However, first, I just want to find out, what is a psychological assessment, and how would we know that our child needs one?
Sure, it's an excellent question. So obviously, a psychological assessment at different ages means different things. But in general, an assessment usually consists of a conversation both with a child and their parent. And typically, especially for older kids, we meet with the children and parents together and then separately as well. And we just want to get a sense of kind of their general medical history, if there have been any illnesses or head injuries. We also want to get a sense of their academic history and education, how they're doing in school, want to get a sense of their social and peer relationships, and then also get a sense of how they're operating at home and family relationships and things like that. Beyond that, we're also looking for to screen for any potential problems with anxiety or depression, considering attention problems or ADHD, certainly also screening for learning problems or anything that may come up in the school setting. We're also screening for other potential problems and more serious things, such as eating disorders or self-harm behavior, suicidal ideation, looking for potential problems that are leading us to be more concerned about a thought disorder or psychosis. So in a psychological assessment, in a first meeting, we're screening for a lot of potential problems. And then when we hear particular answers that kind of can lead us down a path, looking to get more specific information, if we're hearing something that's making us concerned for an anxiety disorder, for example, you know, then we might ask more questions down that line. And certainly, obviously, wanting to take into account how the, you know, patient themselves is doing and how the parent is doing, and trying to ask questions in a way that, you know, builds rapport and helps them to feel, you know, open and that this is a caring process, but also helps us to better understand who they are and what's going on with them.
Wow, that's a lot, but it's a good thing.
It's a lot. They're fairly comprehensive evaluations, you know, but we want to make sure that if someone's coming in front of us, if they've had a referral placed to a psychologist, we want to make sure that we're being complete and paying attention to the whole person, you know, and making sure that we're really understanding kind of what's going on with them and how we can best help them move forward in their lives.
Well, and I have to say, I attest to the value of those assessments, because I, by accident, had one done with one of my children and found out that she was highly dyslexic and had no idea. I always knew that there was something that she was struggling with, but I had taken her to every doctor. They couldn't figure it out. And sure enough, it was during that assessment that the doctor said to me, you know, I think she is dyslexic. And sure enough, she was. And the poor girl, here she was in high school, had been struggling with this, and I had not been able to find any answers for 13 years. So I'm all about that being of value. So thank you for what you do.
Absolutely.
We only have 2 minutes, so I want to get some quick answers on some things.
Sure.
How do you get your teenager to stop texting and driving?
It's a very common problem at this point, and we know that, unfortunately, scare tactics don't work very well. So telling them about all the potential things that can go wrong and all the potential problems that they can cause, or harm that they can cause to themselves or others, don't tend to bring about the greatest changes in behavior. I tell parents that kids tend to learn best always when we model the behavior we want them to do. So that means, parents, put your phones down while you are driving also, and let your kids see you do that. Have them see you do it kind of from the time that they're growing up until the time that they become drivers. Kind of modeling that behavior is, I think, incredibly important, so that they realize that you know that it's important, not only for them, but for you as well. I think is kind of a really big thing that parents can do.
I want to thank you so much. I wish we had more time to go over some more questions with you, but thank you so much. I think there's a huge value in even knowing what a psychological assessment is, because there's probably a lot of moms out there saying to themselves, gosh, there's something just not clicking for my child, and that might just be the answer. So thank you so much for joining us. I want to thank you, everyone, for joining me every week here on Mom Talk Radio. It's been a great hour, and I hope you have found as much value in it as I have. Remember, you can follow us on Mom Talk Radio at Mom Talk Radio on Twitter, and download the app so you can listen to past shows. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.